City Council, in Paxton, no more chasing down liquor license holders. Issued permits must be picked up promptly. Hello, this is Tom Scott with the Ford County Chronicle for Wednesday, April 22nd, 2026. We begin our reading on the front page, Friday's severe storms, on a path of destruction. Straight line winds, tornadoes flip semis, tear roofs off buildings, topple trees and power lines. Severe storms that brought straight-line winds and tornadoes to the area Friday night caused a path of destruction in Ford and Iroquois counties, including in and around Gibson City, Buckley, and Loda. A suspected EF1-rated tornado with 90-mile-per-hour winds touched down west of Gibson City shortly after 9:30 p.m. and moved east through the city, according to WCIA Channel 3 News meteorologist Jacob Dickey. The tornado caused damage to a number of structures, blowing the roofs off the Lee Lowry American Legion Post No. 568 at North Sagamon Avenue, Kierfot Graphics at 312 West 8th Street, and a storage building owned by Bill Krause directly across 8th Street. Trees and power lines were down, too, moving from West 8th Street to the northeast. The Legion Post was closed starting Monday until further notice to allow for repairs to be made. We would like to thank everyone that has dropped off monetary donations to help us with repairs, the Legion's Facebook page said. Thank you for your concerns and support. Means a lot. In neighboring Iroquois County, a confirmed EF1 tornado hit the Buckley area too, with its fierce winds lifting the roof off a structure owned by Drake Sanders just south of town by St. John's at Woodland Cemetery. Most of the second floor rafters landed inside the building, said village trustee Peggy Shockley. The rest of the roof landed in the cemetery located across the road from the Sanders building second floor living quarters. The town, in southwestern Iroquois County, was left without power Friday night as well, according to Shockley, who recalled that the lights went out just after 9:15 p.m., not long after an alert sounded on her phone regarding a tornado warning issued by the National Weather Service. "My curtains were blowing straight out," she said. "When you see that, you know something wrong is about to happen." The next day, Shockley drove around the area with her husband, Village President Scott Shockley, and came across utility workers working two dozen toppled trees less than 2 miles south of Buckley to the west of the railroad tracks along U.S. 45. Meanwhile, the fierce winds caused two semi-trailers to flip over on Interstate 57 near Buckley, forcing the shutdown of the highway, according to Danny Neal, deputy coordinator of the Iroquois County Emergency Management Agency. The Buckley tornado initially touched down west of Loda, causing the collapse of two empty grain bins, then continued to the east and northeast just south of Buckley, Dickey said. It was on the ground for a little over 9 miles. Iroquois County Emergency Management Agency Director Scott Anderson said the same storm system traveled through Watseka and into Kentland, Indiana, where it also caused damage. One wind gust measured it up to 73 miles per hour, he said. The damage in Watseka appears to be from straight-line winds, the outflow from the supercell thunderstorm as it passed on its way towards Indiana, Anderson said Saturday in a Facebook post. Watseka saw a concentrated area of major tree damage on all on the southeast quadrant of the city, Anderson said. Elsewhere in Iroquois County, there was damage in the Milford, Woodland, and Loda areas. At Greg Newall's farm property west of Loda, a number of structures sustained damage. "The grain handling and storage part of the farm is an absolute disaster, and an irrigation rig is partially tipped over," said Newald, a Ford County board member whose power planter business is operated at the farm. Our planter and the farm shop looked to have made it out virtually unscathed by a literal miracle of God. Thankfully, everyone is safe and sound. Steel, concrete, etc. can and will be rebuilt. The cleanup and rebuild process starts Monday, April 20th, and it would not happen that quickly without the great people in our small towns who are willing to and able to jump in when the need arises. Anderson said there was significant destruction at the North Farm, north of Milford, where cattle barns that had just been rebuilt following a storm last June were again destroyed Friday night. No animals were hurt or lost. Anderson said Monday that the National Weather Service, following a survey of the Knoth Farm, confirmed the damage there was caused by a second tornado that touched down in Iroquois County. The tornado continued east into unincorporated Darrow in Sheldon Township and destroyed power poles just south of U.S. 24 near Effner at the Newton County, Indiana line. The strength of the wind required to fell the poles in that way earned the tornado an EF2 rating, Anderson said. The tornado continued into Newton County. Heavy damage was also reported in Woodland, south of Watseka, where outbuildings, trees, and power poles were knocked down or destroyed, Anderson said. Anderson said no residential structures were reported to have been destroyed in Iroquois County, although several outbuildings or grain storage structures were significantly damaged or destroyed. There were no injuries reported. In Paxton, which activated its tornado warning sirens twice Friday night, there was also some minor tree damage and signs blown sideways on the north end of town, Neil said. WCIA Channel 3 News reported multiple confirmed tornadoes in central Illinois, including one near Mount Pulaski in Logan County, and one that touched down south of Mahomet while heading towards Champaign. In Bloomington, where there was significant damage reported, there were wind gusts measured at 85 miles per hour. The Rivian plant in Bloomington Normal suffered a significant structural damage to part of the facility, according to WCIA Channel 3 News, noting there was a large emergency response and all employees were accounted for. Also in McLean County, there was significant damage reported in and near Downs and Ellsworth, and an estimated 21,000 people were reported to be without power in the county at one point. And we have stories with a little more detail on some of the wind destruction. Storm causes mass destruction at rural Loda Farm. Loda. Storms that swept across Illinois on Friday night left widespread damage in their wake, and the Newall Farm of rural Loda certainly saw that impact. For a farm facility that's been here for bazillions of years and bins that have been here for a long time, the landscape and skyline in this part of Ford County has changed dramatically, Greg Newald said. Newald said workers were out on the farm when their phones started going off with storm alerts around 9:45 p.m. Friday. They went into the grain leg pit, one of the only concrete buildings on the farm, and waited out the weather. After the storms, they found that three sections of irrigation rigs had been flipped over and that the majority of the grain facility had been wiped out. One grain leg was kinked to the point that Newald said it was sticking about 100 feet up into the sky. That included a 42-foot bin, a 48-foot bin, two 30-foot bins, and a 36-foot bin. They were emptied and just crinkled up like an empty soup can, Newald said. Demolition crews and crane crews were on the farm all day Monday to stabilize the structures for safety. While a cost estimate has not been obtained, Newall said he figures it could cost north of $1 million to get the farm back into shape. It is now planting season, so he is looking at about 4 months until they need to use the facilities that no longer exist. If they are unavailable by then, the Newalls will have to entirely change their marketing structure, bringing grain straight to the elevator after harvest rather than being able to store it in weight of preferred sale price. There's a lot at play here besides just some galvanized grain bins, Niewald said. This is by far the worst damage Niewald has experienced at the farm. Some years back, they had grain lakes kinked in strong winds, but this mass destruction was all new to Niewald, he said. At the moment, he said, everyone is feeling pretty numb about the situation. If Niewald can find a silver lining, it's the fact that he can turn to local businesses to deal with the damage in the short term, as well as building up replacement structures once it's time for that. We're going to make the best of the situation. We don't have any other real choice but to make the best of the situation and move forward, Niewald said. Then from Gibson City, Gibson City Legion building damaged by storm. Donations being accepted to help. Gibson City. A storm with winds of up to 100 miles per hour ripped through Gibson City on Friday night, causing severe damage to the city's American Legion post. We were playing music in here, and one of the girls came through the back door and said the sirens were going off, and the next thing I know there's water flying through the ceilings, said the Legion post commander Steve Anderson. He said patrons ran to a nearby house for shelter while he stayed behind. When he walked out, furniture was lying in the street, and it was just a mess, according to Anderson. But that wasn't all. Parts of the roof were blown away. We can see daylight from the second floor, so we know something's missing, said Anderson. Out of precaution, they are waiting for the professionals to examine the damage. Alicia Skinner, who owns A. Renee across the street, said the American Legion has been a helping hand in the community for years. They are the first to help in any way, whether it's food, anything like that, said Skinner. So it's devastating that they are in need, and I hope that the community comes together and helps them now. Anderson said the community is indeed returning the favor. A lot of phone calls. I'm totally surprised how many people are calling us wanting to help, said Anderson. He said the American Legion isn't the only building needing repairs, so they plan to be there to help, like they always have. You are not alone in this. If you need us, we're there, said Anderson. And our last story about the storm. Three taken to hospital after semi rolls over on Interstate 57. For hours, I-57 was shut down. Buckley. Three people were taken to a hospital with injuries Friday night after multiple semi-truck rollovers on Interstate 57 in Iroquois County amid severe weather. The rollovers also led to hours-long road closures. Illinois State Police said at approximately 9:57 p.m. on I-57 southbound at milepost 270 in Buckley, Troop 5 troopers responded to the report of a semi-truck rollover. The driver and passenger were both transported to an area hospital with injuries. The roadway at that location was shut down and reopened at approximately 12:16 a.m. At nearly the same location, about half an hour later, at 10:35 p.m., Troop 5 troopers responded to another semi-rollover. The driver of the semi was transported to an area hospital with injuries. The roadway was shut down following the rollover and was reopened at approximately 2:30 a.m. For both of the incidents, there was no further information immediately released. Back on the front page, we have from the Ford County Clerk and Recorder's Office, Frederick resigns as county clerk. Early exit, 7 months before term expires, follows narrow loss in March primary election. Paxton. Almost 10 years after she first became Ford County Clerk and Recorder, and more than 18 years after she started her employment at the County Clerk and Recorder's Office, Amy Frederick has resigned from her elected position. Frederick submitted her formal resignation letter last Wednesday to the County Board's Chairman, Chase McCall of Gibson City, effective at the close of business on Friday, April 17th. On Friday morning, Frederick told the Ford County Chronicle that she has accepted a position as an executive assistant in Champaign. She declined to say specifically where. "I found out Wednesday, midday, that I officially got the position," Frederick said in a phone interview. "So I submitted my resignation letter right away." The 53-year-old Frederick, a native of Gibson City and lifelong Ford County resident, said she will continue to live in Paxton. Frederick was already due to give up the county clerk and recorder's seat in 7 months when her current 4-year term expires on November 30th, after having been defeated in her re-election bid in last month's Republican primary by Kelsey Vaughn, a Paxton resident in her second year serving as a District 1 county board member. "I feel I've left this office in great shape," Frederick said Friday. "I'm proud of the work I've accomplished in these 18 years. It's just a shame that it's come to an end so quickly." McCall said Friday that he plans to set a special board meeting for sometime this month to declare Frederick's position vacant, after which an appointment will be made to fill it through November 30th, when Vaughn assumes her first 4-year term as clerk. Before an appointment is made, McCall said, he will notify the county's Republican Democratic parties, which will have an opportunity to recommend candidates for the county board's consideration. "They can recommend somebody," McCall said, "but the county board makes the final determination." McCall said he plans to contact Vaughn to see if she would be interested in filling the vacancy. If Vaughn were to be appointed, she would be required to vacate her county board seat. "I have not reached out to her just to see if she's ready to go," McCall said Friday of Vaughn, who did not immediately respond to a text message from the Ford County Chronicle. "It's her decision. If she's like, no, I need more time to prepare, then we'll think about something else." McCall said he hopes to have the position filled within the month. In the meantime, Frederick's chief deputy, Mary Neiman, will be the point person for the county clerk and recorder's office, ensuring its operation continues uninterrupted. Mary will be the day-to-day tasks as much as she can do, you know, keep the doors open, answer the phones, talk to customers or whatnot, McCall said. McCall said he wishes Frederick the best in her future endeavors. Frederick lost in the March 17th primary via a narrow 50-vote margin. Vaughn is unopposed in November's general election. Frederick started working in the county clerk and recorder's office in January 2008 as a deputy clerk under Linda Kellerals, then was promoted 4 years later to chief deputy. Frederick was then appointed as the retiring Kellerall's replacement in June 2016 and subsequently won election to a 2-year term as county clerk and recorder in November 2016 and 4-year terms in both 2018 and 2022. Frederick said she has seen a lot of change in the county clerk and recorder's office over her nearly 2 decades of working there, especially in regards to the use of technology. "When I first came here, we were only handling paper documents as far as death certificates and birth certificates, and now everything has switched to online," Frederick said. "Everything that we run is online, but I think that's just how the times have changed." The 39-year-old Vaughn, who was elected to a 4-year term on the county board in 2024, is currently employed at Paxton Family Dental. Vaughn previously served on the Paxton Community Nursery School Board from 2011 to 2018, including as its secretary and president. She has also served as St. John Lutheran's PTL Vice President and will soon be the board's president for the 2026-2027 school year. A resident of Ford County since 1990, she graduated in 2004 from Paxton Buckley Loda High School and in 2007 from Parkland College in Champaign. In her response to a Ford County Chronicle survey in advance of the primary election, Vaughn said her priorities, if elected, would be timely tax bills for Ford County, building a rapport with constituents, colleagues, and citizens. Accuracy in all records, accountability, dependability, and continuous growth and respect for all. Now we'll turn to the obituaries in the Ford County Chronicle for Wednesday, April 22nd. Patrick A. Kramer, Gibson City. Patrick A. Kramer, 50, graduate of Gibson City Melvin Sibley High School, died Monday, April 6th. Private graveside services will be at a later date. Memorial contributions may be made to the American Lutheran Church in Gibson City. Lida Nichols, and that's spelled N-I-C-H-O-A-L-D-S, Onarga. Clyda Jean Nichols, 72, of Onarga, died Friday, April 17th at Faith Place in Danforth. No information about funeral arrangements is given in the obituary. Memorials may be made to the Onarga United Methodist Church. Joan Ross, Paxton. June Joan Ross, 90, of Paxton, died at 8:26 p.m. Monday, April 13th, at Accolade Healthcare of Paxton Senior Living. A private graveside service will be held at Glen Cemetery in Paxton. Memorials may be made to an organization of the donor's choice. Returning to the front page, we have, in Paxton, no more chasing down liquor license holders. Issued permits must be picked up promptly. Paxton. The Paxton City Council approved changes to the city's liquor code during its monthly meeting on Tuesday, April 14th, including a new requirement that liquor licenses be picked up from City Hall promptly upon issuance. Apparently, there's been an issue where licensees, we basically have to chase them down to give them their license, City Attorney Tony Schuring told the alderman. So this is intending to free up some time of Controller Treasurer Tammy Jensen's time and the mayor's time and utility billing clerk Terry Siddle's time. They should not be having to chase down liquor licensees to pick up their licenses, so we're trying to address that. Moving forward, Schuring said, licensees will be given only 5 calendar days after a liquor license is issued to pick it up from City Hall, or their license will be considered abandoned. We're not going to chase you. You have 5 calendar days to pick it up, Schuring said. If you don't pick it up, we're going to assume you don't want it, and it's going to be abandoned. And if you sell any alcohol in that period of time, where we have the license at City Hall, and we can conclusively prove that it was not posted at the licensee's location as required by law, it is revoked, and you are prohibited from being issued a license for the next 12 months. Schuring said another notable change to the liquor code is that the city's liquor licenses will be valid for 1 year rather than 6 months, as they historically had been in Paxton. Kind of the standard throughout the state is an annual licensing. One license, you pay one fee, and it's good for 1 year, Schuring said. The city has been kind of an outlier there. Because the change to an annual licensing could create a hardship for some of the city's existing liquor license holders who had been accustomed to semi-annual licensing, Schuring noted that the ordinance does include kind of a time-limited provision that allows them to apply to the mayor for basically a payment plan for that. The terms are that it would be only for existing licensees, it would only be this one time, and they have to have their fee paid in full, Schuring said. The ultimate agreement would be up to the mayor, and the fee would have to be paid in full by October 30th, which is when their second payment would be due anyway. The liquor code was also amended to accommodate the creation of a Class H license liquor license for nonprofit special events. This is something that the State Liquor Control Act already has within it, and this is something that for various events that we have with nonprofits in the community where alcohol is served, we really need something like this, Schering said. It operates more like a special event permit than a typical license. It would be valid for a specific period of time, and the application would have to be filed at least 30 days before the event, so that we have time to process it and get the license issued. It's similar to stuff we already have in our code, but it's somewhat different. Other approved changes to the liquor code included an added vicarious liability provision, formalizing kind of what we've already done in the event that a licensee staff sells liquor to an underage buyer, for example, plus edits the language just to make it consistent throughout the ordinance. All eight aldermen, Eric Evans, Dean Gyken, Matt Greenberg, Kristen Larson, Rob Pacey, Joe Reinhardt, Justin Withers, and Wilson were present for the council's 26-minute meeting, with Wilson serving as mayor or mayor pro tem in the absence of Mayor Bill Ingold. Turning to the inside of the paper from the Melvin Village Board, village clerk inundated with Freedom of Information Act requests. Melvin. Village clerk Jeff Glasscock has recently been inundated with Freedom of Information Act requests, according to village president Amber Hoffman. In providing a news update regarding the village's monthly meeting on Tuesday, April 14th, Hoffman said the numerous FOIA requests include those from companies seeking data that the village does not even possess, including commercial building permits or residential building permits. It seems that these companies are created with the sole purpose of overwhelming small governments with time-sensitive requests in an attempt to strong-arm settlements under threat of FOIA violations and legal proceedings, Hoffman said. These requests take time away from our already limited time and create major obstacles in other projects we're trying to complete for our residents. Our objectives in creating efficiencies, updating ordinance, or even creating our updated website are all placed on the back burner because these FOIA requests have a deadline. Thankfully, our clerk is very efficient and has the time to dedicate to these FOIA requests. But not every municipality is in this position. For the sake of all local governments, I ask that the people of our incredible small towns reach out to their local representative regarding FOIA reform. We need action to protect our small governments from these AI request farms that aim only to extort the most vulnerable towns. And we'll close on a positive note. Rising Baking Company, Gibson City Bakery celebrates 1 year anniversary. Gibson City. One downtown Gibson City Bakery is celebrating a sweet victory with its first anniversary. At the age of just 19, Natalie DeShepper opened her bakery, Rising Baking Company, in downtown Gibson City. Now, 1 year later, she is celebrating her shop's first anniversary and her birthday. This place is like my baby, so just to have it be in the same birthday as mine, it's going to be cool, DeShepper said. Every year from now on, we'll just get to celebrate both. She said she found her love for baking while mourning the loss of her boyfriend, Colin Bain, who died 4 years ago. I started baking because I needed something to do with my hands to give my brain a break, she said. I think about him walking in here, just seeing everything, and honestly, I think he'd crack some joke. Her main ingredient is highlighting her local vendors, featuring their candles, clothing, and cards. Even though she has been in business for a year, she said not every day is a piece of cake. The hard days don't have to win, she said. One hard day, one bad day, doesn't lead to a bad life, and there's always hope for the next day. And that's all the time we have for reading this week's Ford County Chronicle. This is Tom Scott. I look forward to reading with you again very soon.